Hello, New York Giant fans, and welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. Patricia Traina here with you, and it is Monday, April 6th. Now, today is kind of a significant day in that it was supposed to be the start of the Giants off-season conditioning program. The Giants are getting back to work today. However, because of the COVID-19 pandemic that's gripping the world right now, it's uncharted waters for them, meaning they're going to be able to do some work via installs remotely. They are going to, I guess, have meetings through applications like Zoom or Skype or, you know, whatever choice they've made. But they're not going to be able to gather at the Quest Diagnostics Training Center. They're not going to be able to, you know, meet with each other. They're not going to be able to, you know, get to know each other. They're certainly not going to be able to get to practice, not while social distancing is still in effect, not while there are still legal mandates as handed down by the state of New Jersey's governor, Phil Murphy, about social distancing. These mandates going through the end of April. So just some really weird times, some scary times, but everybody's health and well-being, of course, is important. So it's going to be interesting to see how well the Giants adjust given these uncharted waters. But given the times, you just have to do what you have to do in order to stay healthy and not spread the virus around if you happen to be a carrier of it. So we'll see how things unfold for the Giants over the next several weeks. We'll see how also the rest of the NFL does with the social distancing. That's going to certainly be interesting if and when they do get on the field this year for practices and whatnot. So anyway, gloom and doom aside, we have a very, very special show for you today. I did an interview late last week with NFL.com draft analyst Daniel Jeremiah. He is host of Move the Sticks podcast, along with Bucky Brooks, Bucky being a guy that I had on the podcast last year. So really glad to have welcomed the second half of that Move the Sticks podcast team to the podcast. And Daniel was kind enough to spend about 20 minutes with me on the phone. We went over all kinds of different draft scenarios. He gave me some insight into some prospects, some of whom I mentioned by name. He explained some of his logic behind some of, you know, his picks and whatnot. And it was a really fun and informative interview. And I'm pleased to say I'm going to play it straight through without any commercial breaks, starting now. Hello, everyone. This is Patricia Traina, and on the line with me, I have Daniel Jeremiah. He is an NFL network analyst who you can follow on Twitter at Move the Sticks. He is also the host of Move the Sticks podcast, along with Bucky Brooks, and he is knee-deep in the NFL draft, as am I, and as am a lot of other writers this time of year. And Daniel, I really appreciate you taking some time to come on the program with me.
Oh, I appreciate it. It's all this craziness happening in the world right now, so it's nice to just talk some football. It's a nice thing to do this time of year.
Absolutely. Now, Daniel, you know, I have to start off with, unfortunately, the circumstances that we are in right now. You know, the COVID outbreak and the effect that it's had on the draft. Now, the draft is still going on, obviously, as scheduled, but what has not been going on are the pro days and the visits and stuff like that. Now, when you go back to the combine and you think about the guys who, either because they were injured or because they were advised not to work out, whatever the case may be, how much do you think not having the pro days and those visits and whatnot are maybe dropping or hurting some of those guys' status?
Well, you know, I actually think it's interesting from whether they worked out or not, into putting them into two different categories. Because if we look at it, the guys that had an injury and did not run or work out because of an injury, I think it can have a big impact because teams want to be comfortable where this player is health wise, and not so much about what time they ran, but just are they up to full speed? Are they functional? That can be a major concern. You know, a lot of times we have guys that just, they don't want to run. They want to wait till their pro day for perfect conditions. They're healthy and just chose not to. And you know, we discourage that from the scouting standpoint, but I don't think that's going to impact those players quite as much. If you liked him, you're still going to like him. If you thought he was slow, you're just going to assume he would have ran slow. You don't like him. So I don't think those guys is going to have much of an impact, but I do think the injured players not getting a chance to show that they were healthy at a pro day, that's going to have an impact.
Do you think there are some big name players out there who, I don't want to say their stock is going to tumble, but do you think that their stock is going to get hurt because they didn't, you know, choose to work out? Any big namers?
Yeah, you know, look, I think when you look at Gross Matos from Penn State, you know, I would say guys like that had a chance to help themselves, you know, even push up higher in the draft, but they're not going to fall that far. You know, Chaisson from LSU, again, if he had a chance to work out and run really well, maybe he can improve his stock, but I don't see them dropping that far. So I had 11 guys in my top 50 that did not run at the combine, but I don't really see too many of them being negatively impacted by it. It's more so the guys that just, you know, you're hoping they would get a chance to get healthy by the time they got to their pro day, and that didn't happen. You know, that those guys, you could say, okay, maybe it impacted them a little bit. Another one would be AJ Epenesa from Iowa. He actually ran at the combine, probably wishes he didn't run at the combine because he ran slow. He ran a 5.04. So he would have had an opportunity to improve that a little bit at the pro day, and that disappeared. So yeah, I think you'll see some minor movement. I don't think it's going to be quite as drastic as some people think.
In terms of, you know, how this has affected, you know, the scouting process, do you think that, you know, once we get back to quote unquote normal, do you think maybe teams are going to change how they do things? Maybe we'll see less analysis. What is it that I always mess up that saying?
Paralysis by analysis. Yeah. You're on it. I mean, we've always said, and a lot of guys I'm friends with in the league have always said, man, if we would just do the draft right after the season, I think we'd have better luck. Because you get that fog of confusion in the spring where there's just so much time and so much, you know, looking at things from all different angles and overthinking it, paralysis by analysis, however you want to use it, that term. But I think the change that's going to happen in the future is that teams are going to be very aggressive in trying to collect as much information as they can on these players from a speed standpoint from a school. And a lot of schools were hesitant. You know, these kids did not run in the spring before their last year. It used to be back in the day, they would all do it. So we would have times on these guys going into their final season of college. Now, most schools don't do that anymore. But what they do is they have the GPS and the tracking systems on all these players. So I think you'll see teams, whether or not the colleges are going to come out and just give it to you, I think you're going to see a lot of NFL teams that have good relationships with these colleges do their best to get that information to find out who the most explosive kids are.
Now, in terms of the top of the draft, the Giants draft number 4 as of now, depending on if there's a trade down. And I've seen a lot of scenarios where it all depends on how Tua checks out, that maybe the Giants could move down. But, you know, it just I'm not sure whether or not it's feasible. Is it smart to move down? What are you hearing as far as the top few, like the top 10 spots of the draft? Is there a possibility of the Giants moving down? And how far down do you think they can realistically go and still get a quality player?
Well, first of all, I love living in the imaginative world where Dave Gettleman actually trades down, because that would be a treat to actually see that for the first time. I can make sense of them trading down. The challenge is really when you look at it, 1 and 2 seem to be Burrow and Chase Young. Then you get to 3, the Detroit Lions with a big glaring need at corner after trading Darius Slay to the Eagles. Jeffrey Okuda seems to be their player. There's no need for them to take Jeffrey Okuda there when you have teams at 5 and 6 potentially willing to trade up for a quarterback. So if the Dolphins at 5 or the Chargers at 6 are going to trade up to get their quarterback, I just think they would be more likely to try and get that deal done at number 3 to get up higher. And you'd have a willing partner with the Lions who'd be willing to move back. That I would think that would be the trade-up spot. But if for some reason Detroit is worried that maybe the Giants could take Okuda and that's their guy and they want to stick and pick, then they take him there. Then I think now you have an opportunity to pit the Dolphins and the Chargers against one another to slide up to your pick, which is really the perfect world for the Lions, because you could slide back 1 or 2 picks, get whoever you're going to take at that spot and get some extra picks. But I think it's going to be difficult because I just think if a trade goes down, it goes down at 3, not at 4.
Now, again, sticking with the Giants, you have, if you stick at 4, you have a choice of offensive tackle or potentially Isaiah Simmons. A very tough choice, I think. What do you think is going to be the deciding factor there? I mean, I know everybody grades these guys differently, but in terms of value, where did the Giants get the best value in those picks?
Well, if I'm going to go just off kind of how I've rated the players, my top, you know, if you look at Isaiah Simmons, he's my third player. If you look at my top tackle, it's Becton, who's my seventh player. So you'd say, okay, well, Isaiah Simmons is the better player. However, this team and this, you know, regime with this coaching staff and this personnel department with Joe Judge and with Dave Gettleman is going to go as far as their quarterback, Daniel Jones, is going to take them. So that to me says the most urgent need is along the offensive line. I know what they paid Nate Solder, but that, to me, that's time to recognize a mistake there. Like that's not the long-term answer there. He's not good enough. You need help at both tackle spots. You've got the crown jewel of your franchise is Daniel Jones, and protecting him is number one on the priority list. So that, to me, would lead to a tackle trumping the impact of somebody like Isaiah Simmons. And I say that understanding how bad this Giants defense is and how much help that they need. But I would rather, if I'm the Giants next year and you told me that we were going to be an 8-8 football team, I'd much rather be an 8-8 football team with Daniel Jones, confident, emerging, playing at a high level because he's protected, than be an 8-8 football team because our defense is stopping people, but my quarterback's getting the tar beat out of him. That, to me, is not the way I'd want to build this thing.
Okay. And if I could, I'd like to get some more information on your opinion behind Mekhi Becton. If I'm not mistaken, I remember seeing that he had minimal pro-style sets and some technique issues. And I'm just kind of curious as to, you know, between that and the possibility of a truncated training camp, do you think that might lower his draft stock in that first round?
I don't. Sometimes it's flavors with what people want. He is a dominating run blocker, but you get paid in this league for how you pass protect. And with him, he is so big and so long and so athletic, you cannot go through him, you cannot go around him. So I think he gave up one sack maybe the whole season. You know, when you watch him, he's a little bit unorthodox, but I don't have the issues, the concerns about him in pass protection. In fact, he's been spending this entire run-up to the draft with Duke Mayweather in Dallas, who has been, you know, working with Terron Armstead and Trent Brown and dozens of other NFL offensive linemen. They all go to him to get training, and that's where this kid's been getting daily work. So I don't have as much of a concern with him. At the end of the day, he's going to show up at training camp. He's still going to be 6'7". He's still going to be 365 pounds. He's still going to be really athletic, and I don't think it'll be as big of an adjustment as some might think.
I want to get your opinion on a couple of needs that I perceive, at any rate, for the Giants, because we all know that they see their needs a little differently than all of us on the outside. But who do you think are some of the best fits for a single high safety?
Yeah, when you look at the single high safeties in this draft class, I mean, if you want to go outside the first round and find some targets, I look at a guy like Ashton Davis from Cal. He's a really good single high safety who has some corner ability. So he makes sense in that regard. He's somebody that I think you might get a little bit of a value on because of the fact that he didn't get a chance to compete in the Senior Bowl or the Combine. He's coming off a little bit of an injury there, but he's got plenty of range. He's one. The guy that I have a little bit ahead of him, somebody with outstanding genes, is Antoine Winfield, who can play in the nickel. He can also play as the high safety. He's a little bit undersized, at a little over 5'9". But he's got an outstanding range as a middle-of-the-field safety. And those would be the top two guys, I would say, from that standpoint. The best safeties overall that are going to be more kind of drop-down guys, Xavier McKinney from Bama, he's going to drop down close to the line of scrimmage. Delpit from LSU, he can play as the high safety, but the more I continue to study on him, the more I felt he's probably a little bit more comfortable down low, but he's somebody that can do it. And then Jeremy Chinn from Southern Illinois, is kind of he's a rocket ship right now with his stock, but he's played high, he's played down. I like him better down, but those guys, kind of the down guys, I think the ones I mentioned earlier would be more that single high post safety.
Now, this is a historically deep wide receiver class. So who are some guys that, you know, perimeter guys that you think can be steals maybe in rounds 3 and 4?
Yeah, there's some good players. Rounds 3 and 4, Van Jefferson from Florida, John Hightower from Boise State. If you're looking for, a true X receiver, a big physical player, you can get into the Antonio Gandy-Golden from Liberty. Brian Edwards can play that role from South Carolina. He's a really good player. Lynn Bowden is a fun player. He's probably more of a gadget slot type player who did some quarterback stuff for Kentucky last year after their quarterback got hurt, but an outstanding athlete. Those guys I really like. And if you want somebody that's a burner, I think you probably get this player in the 5th round. I really like Darnell Mooney from Tulane. He's real slight. He's only 176 pounds, but he ran 4.38. And when you watched him, when they stepped up in competition against Auburn, against a very, very good corner there, probably a 2nd round corner in Igbinoghene, he tore him up. So he's somebody I like in that range.
What about at center? That's a position that I've seen mixed opinions on, whether or not this is a good class or a bad class for it. What do you see from there?
Center-wise, I think it's okay. We don't have any big-time players. But Ruiz from Michigan, I think, will go in the 2nd round. He's the best one of the bunch. Cushenberry from LSU, a little bit behind him. I think both those guys are 2nd round players, 2nd round centers. And then you get into that 3rd round range, I think there's a couple intriguing players. Nick Harris from Washington, who's undersized but really athletic. And then Matt Hennessy from Temple, a little bit bigger but still a really good athlete. I think those are kind of your 3rd round group of centers.
Now, there's a wide receiver, just jumping back to the receiver for a moment, that his name popped up. I wanted to get your take on him because I don't think he's gotten a whole lot of press. Isaiah Coulter from Rhode Island. What have you heard about him? Where is he projecting on team boards?
Yeah, I've watched Coulter. I'm not maybe as high on him. I have a late round grade on him, but he's almost 6'2". He ran 4.45. He's got strong hands. I just didn't see that speed show up on tape when I watched him. I didn't see quite as much separation. Didn't really see that second gear. He was to me more of like a 6th round pick, but I have seen some of the buzz out there in the media. I just didn't have quite that same love.
What about linebacker Logan Wilson of Wyoming?
He's one of my favorites. I think he's one of the best coverage linebackers. He's actually the first inside linebacker outside my top 50 list. So he's probably in the 50 to 60 range on my overall board, but he's just got fantastic coverage ability. He can change direction in space. He's a really good blitzer. Reminds me a lot of Fred Warner when he was coming out of BYU, and Fred's really blossomed with the 49ers.
And then finally, Daniel, what every year there just seems to be a surprise, something that just nobody saw coming. What would you, if you had a stake claim, stake your bets on it, what do you think is going to just absolutely set this draft on its ear?
Ooh, I will say, a lot of times we'll see teams in the top of the 2nd round come back in to the bottom of the 1st round for a quarterback. So I think it could kind of be interesting if Jordan Love were to start to drop a little bit, a quarterback from Utah State. I could see a team like the Indianapolis Colts who pick at the top of the 2nd round, make an aggressive push to come back up into the early to mid 20s and go find their quarterback to sit behind Phillip Rivers for a year or two and then take over. That would be kind of a fun way to shake up the bottom of the 1st round.
Indeed. The draft is always full of surprises. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be different with the television, the television aspect, doing it the way they used to do it years ago.
It's going to be bizarre. I mean, who knows what's going to happen with how this is going to get pulled off from a broadcast standpoint, these teams juggling where they're going to be and trying to figure this thing out. But that's what we all get paid to do, right? You got to adapt and adjust to what we have here.
Do you think it's going to impact teams that they can't have their traditional war rooms? Or, I mean, I guess they can work remotely, but how? I guess with seeing the boards and the discussions and all that stuff.
I've talked to several GMs about this. The majority of them say they'll be fine. Mm-hmm. I talked to one the other day who was a little bit concerned because they don't have the digital draft board, but they still use the cards. So they have a lot of information on those cards. So to be outside of that room would be difficult for them. But look, there's still time. You've got 3 weeks here to figure this thing out to kind of figure out where you're going to be and get set up. So I think they'll be able to get it done.
All right. Well, I appreciate the time. That's Daniel Jeremiah from the NFL Network. And you can follow him on Twitter at Move the Sticks. He's also the host of Move the Sticks podcast with Bucky Brooks. Does a great job. Daniel, thank you so much for the time and the insight. Really appreciate it. And I hope you stay safe. And whatever the draft brings, I hope it's a successful one for, you know, your broadcast and your work.
Thank you so much. It's been great to visit with you, Patricia. All the best to you and your family.
Thank you.